know you can't meditate. If you a freak, then come on with me. And I know what you came here to do. Now let me see you get loose. Going
down for coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Happy Monday, everybody. The Browns 30-13 losers in Seattle yesterday, and it was an interesting game. Started off on a very high note, the Browns driving down the field, getting a touchdown on their very first possession from Johnny Manziel, looking very good. Third and 70, found Gary Barnage, who caught his ninth touchdown on the season, tying Ozzie Newsome for the most in a single season by a Browns tight end in the history of this great franchise. But ultimately, it was a game where the Browns were once again undone on defense. And I'm not saying Johnny put up enough points. 13 is not enough points to win in the National Football League. But I was at least encouraged by what I saw from him against a very good defense in a very hostile environment. Five dropped passes by the Browns, which was no good. No good in that regard for them. But overall, it was the defense. They get 182 yards on the ground.
5.1 yards a rip.
They could not get off the field on third down. 9 of 12 conversions allowed. It was just one of those games where it seemed that Seattle, if they wanted to line up jumbo, which they did many, many times, and run the ball, they could. If they wanted to spread out and take advantage of the mismatches in the Browns secondary, they did that. Russell Wilson on the day, 3 more touchdowns, no interception, is now the only quarterback in the history of the National Football League to have multiple, 3 or more passing touchdowns without an interception in 5 straight games. Doug Baldwin caught 2 touchdowns. He now has 2 or more touchdown catches in 4 straight games. The Browns, it was a game that didn't feel that bad, but ultimately was never in question.
And you know what? Even just to talk about the rushing attack by the Seattle Seahawks and the game in general, it was a slow, methodical death.
Yes.
You know, coming out of the gates, you loved what you saw the Cleveland Browns. It looked like they continued what they were doing against San Francisco. It was decisive. It was calculated in their ability to convert and get down the field and turn it into points. And what's frustrating to me is how you can do that one drive and not do that in the remainder of the football game. While I know the other team gets paid, they're professionals, they have great coaches, I'm just at a loss for words over the fact that it's a scoring league and we can't score. And I think what you have to evaluate Johnny Manziel is Johnny Manziel's ability to move the football, but his inability to score, because this is a scoring league. Russell Wilson is great because they score a lot of points and they have a defense that doesn't give up a whole lot. You will win a lot of football games with that template.
No question. They put up 30 again on this defense, so that is now 5 out of the last 6 games. The Browns defense has given up 30 or more points. The one, of course, the good game was the one against the San Francisco 49ers. The Browns had only 2 drives on the day of more than 40 yards. Seattle had 6 such drives. Their first 4 possessions, touchdown, touchdown, field goal, field goal. Then they had 1 punt in the second half and then touchdown, field goal until the game, the drive where they just ran out the clock at the end of the game. Now, I did think that all in all, there were some positives in the game. On the offensive side, Duke Johnson continued to show some playmaking ability, led the team with 39 yards receiving and 46 yards rushing. I thought that Johnny showed poise in the pocket. The interception came late when he was just trying on a desperation play, trying to make a play. So other than that, he took care of the football. He was, you know, sacked 3 times on the day. All in all, though, not enough. And 5 drops, and people I know, you say, well, it happens, but that makes 24 out of 32. Sounds a heck of a lot better, by the way.
Yeah, or give him 2 drops. You know, 22 of 32.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, and if you get up to 24 out of 32, it would have been 75%, which would have been pretty darn good against this defense. But all in all, just too much from Seattle. It looked like it was just a very, very, very good team playing a team that was struggling, trying to find its identity. And what became so apparent to me is, and I know that Doug Baldwin's not a household name per se, but Tyler Lockett, they ran him vertically all day long, and he could have had 5 touchdowns of more than 40 yards in this game.
Had Russell Wilson thrown the football in that first one, it was a touchdown over Charles Gaines.
Easily.
Easily.
And he had another one where he beat Bademosi pretty soundly. So it just became so apparent. The lack of playmakers out wide, the inability to get open and to separate was just so apparent to me with this team. Taylor Gabriel continues to struggle. He had an awful drop on a third down that could
have extended his drive. Pryor's drop early.
Pryor had a big drop. So it was a game where it was just the Browns, and as Mike Pence said, not good enough, and it wasn't good enough, and it wasn't a game that you came out of it feeling inspired at all. Kind of went exactly how you thought it would go.
Yeah.
And the opening touchdown was good, and then from there it was kind of downhill as the Browns were outscored 30-6. But we will hear from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine. We'll hear his post-game comments. We'll hear from Joe Thomas, who's speaking with the media today. We'll also talk with Jim Donovan, the voice of the Cleveland Browns from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. But I do want to say this. I want to take a second to say this. That stadium, that environment, all of that is unbelievable and is by far, for me, was I thought the coolest that I had been to in the NFL. Just the stadium is impressive. The sound is off the charts. The passion, they do not sit down at any point during the game, the fans.
And that, you know, what I love about stadiums like that, and you'll see a very similar type of crowd this week at Arrowhead there in Kansas City, is the fans there, no matter whether they're front row or last row in the fifth level, it's they're having fun. Because they know when they show up to that stadium that the passion that they bring will be matched by the passion of the players on the football team. The effort and the time that they put into painting their face and dressing up and getting there early and the fact that they have no voice for their work week, there's as much effort being put in by the players to go out there and win a football game and use the home field advantage as a true advantage and also almost repay those fans for showing up to support them and being loud as they are.
I totally agree with that. And to me, it was the closest thing that I could think of to for an NFL, because you don't get to, at least I haven't gotten, I've been on the road in a lot of the stadiums now. The closest thing you get to a true unified, like, collegiate atmosphere. Those people were absolutely passionate about the Seahawks. They loved it. They brought it all game long. After the first touchdown down in the end where I was standing, all of a sudden I felt like I was getting hailed on. And I didn't know what was happening. And then I looked at my feet. I was getting pelted with Skittles. They weren't throwing them at me, per se, although I think some of them were. I did snatch a couple out of the air and ate them and then gave a little point at some of the super fans. But that's what they do. When there's a touchdown, they just launch Skittles.
Make it rain.
They make it rain Skittles.
Okay.
And it goes all over the end zone where they score the touchdown. And then there's like 10 guys who have these little sweepers that come out. They're ready for it. And then they sweep all the little Skittles away. And their mascot was pretty cool. He brought me some Skittles, and I appreciated that.
But it was
just a cool atmosphere.
It was a cool atmosphere, and that – the Skittles thing started with Marshawn Lynch.
Of course.
Who was not even playing in the football game.
Doesn't matter.
It just goes to show that winning, that fun, that charisma that the players exude is accepted by the fans and then reciprocated by the fans in a gesture like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a neat environment. I don't think it gave the Browns too many problems from talking to them. They all kind of actually appreciated it, and they thought it brought a little more energy to them. It felt like a big game. It felt like the biggest game for a Browns game that I can recall. It felt like it because of the environment, made it feel
like
such
a big
game.
Could you imagine as a football team playing in front of that 8 times a year?
It would be awesome. And it's not – and it, again, I don't want people to say, well, you're saying that that's a better fan base than the Browns. I think the Browns fan base is as passionate as anybody. The way that stadium is designed, they're on top of the field. They're literally on top of the field. There is very little room between the field and the stands. And the way that those arches kind of hang over, it just throws the sound right back down. And the other part of it, too, is they have something to get excited about every Sunday.
Yep.
They know pretty much they're going to see a win, or they're going to see at least a highly competitive, very well-played football game. Now, they have had two losses at home this year. Carolina got them at home, and so did Arizona.
Right.
But they were both great football games. And I just think there's something – success brings that. When you've won a Super Bowl and then you've been to the Super Bowl, I think Cleveland would be rocking on a level we haven't seen.
Of course.
If the Browns were doing that.
Absolutely.
But it just is. It struck me what a very cool environment. Did you play up there at all?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've won up there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you think that as a player? Do players notice things like that? Like, man, this is a pretty cool place to
yes.
play?
Yes. I was a big fan. There's only two stadiums that I did not participate in a football game in the National Football League. One was the Metrodome in New Orleans.
Okay.
The other was University of Phoenix Field in Arizona,
which is a pretty cool
which
place.
I've been to the stadium. I've watched Ohio State get beat by Florida there. Ironically, I was hurt in a preseason game in San Diego, stayed home for the trip while they went and played a preseason game there as well. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Denver's a beautiful stadium. Seattle's a beautiful stadium. There are atmospheres like in Green Bay that you can't replicate because of the history, sure, because of the bleacher seating. Feels a lot like a college atmosphere. But now they've added, you know, the huge scoreboards and the full length field boxes and so on and so forth there. So it's a little different now. But yeah, it's amazing, and I love it up there, and I love the fact that when you get into December and you go out to Seattle, because I've played there in December as well, you don't know what you're going to get, a lot like you don't know what you're going to get weather-wise this week in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Because I played in torrential downpour in Seattle. I've played in a sprinkle in Seattle.
Oh, it could.
I've never played in sunshine in Seattle.
We got lucky. It could have been raining, but the rain held off. But that was, I thought, just something that I wanted to share and something I thought was pretty neat. The other thing that really stood out to me, and I don't know if this came across on TV, and there's a lot of stuff we can talk about. We can talk about, obviously, Charles Gaines, Dante Whitner, the Browns tackling, which was atrocious. Just the defensive performance was bad. And it seemed, once again, that Jim O'Neill and that defense were never in the right scheme or the right coverage or the right blitz for what Seattle was doing.
It seemed like
they were outfoxed.
We looked a step late. All day.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And the way that Seattle did it, they sometimes they just came out and declared, look, we're going to run the football. They'd come out with the tight end and the extra lineman and the fullback and just run the ball.
Yeah.
They would go five empty set backfield. They'd run right at our zones. I think they had a good idea of what we were doing pre-snap because it seemed very easy to them. The other thing, though, that I did want to say that I thought was very interesting about that game and at that field, Dwayne Bowe finally got in there.
He did.
Caught two passes back-to-back. And I thought looked fine out there. 2 for 22 on the day. Obviously, he had, you know, the interception. But they were just trying to make a play. Dwayne Bowe's being mugged there. And Dwayne Bowe's, I think, just trying to play defense. But Giant just threw it up and it got picked off. But Dwayne Bowe, after that interception, I don't know if the cameras caught this. Every single player on the Seahawks, Sherman, Earl Thomas, Wagner, Bennett, all of them, like, stopped. Because there was actually a lot of time between that interception and the next play. Kind of stopped and, like, gave Dwayne Bowe love. We're hugging Dwayne Bowe, like, showing him tons of respect. The whole Seattle defense. Apparently, the last time he was there, he had 3 touchdowns the last time he was in Seattle. And so they just showed him a ton of respect. And it seemed as if the Seattle defenders felt sympathy for Dwayne Bowe for what he went through this year.
I'm sure.
And it almost was a moment of the game. I was sitting there watching. I'm like, this is I've never even seen this. In the middle of a game, the other team showing that respect to a guy who just got on the field for a handful of snaps at the end of the game, literally all of them. And Richard Sherman doesn't do stuff like that lightly.
Right. And you know where that comes from is, you know, Dwayne Bowe's been to, I think, a couple Pro Bowls or at least a Pro Bowl at some point. Richard Sherman's been to Pro Bowls. I think Cliff Averill's been to a couple, or Earl Thomas, so on. You know, maybe not necessarily some of them in Seattle, some of them other places, but when you spend a week in one place, you know, with your friends and family, a bond is developed between those elite players and what happens in Hawaii. That's why going over there is so special and unique and not taken for granted. You exchange numbers, you become friends with each other, you know each other, wives, you know each other's wives' names, their kids, and so on and so forth. So when you go play someplace and you have a friend on the other team, there are text messages being exchanged through the week of, you know, just love, hey, come out and see me pregame, blah, 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 blah. And I know you might say, well, it's out there to be a business trip, but you're out there to go because you have a few opportunities in a year to potentially see these guys that you consider acquaintances or friends. And that's the type of respect that is developed between elite players, and that must have been Seattle's, not pre-planned because they didn't know whether Bowe was going to get on the field or not.
Sure.
Their opportunity to go, hey, you've got us before. We understand, or it's tough what you're going through. Exactly. You're in a bad situation. Give you some respect.
And they did. And after the game, actually, Bowe was coming off. Doug Baldwin chased him down to give him his jersey. Baldwin gave Bowe his jersey and wanted Bowe's jersey. Doug Baldwin's got, 10 touchdowns in the last 4 games.
Right.
Just, I thought that was interesting.
And
just,
Dwayne Bowe has 10 catches for the season.
I do not believe he has 10 catches
okay.
for the season. Well, he's got 7.
Sorry.
For 55 yards. So I just thought that was interesting thing to observe there. 216-578-0850. Call us up. The Ohio Business Machine Hot Topics of the Day. Mike Pettine saying that the game was not good enough. Understatement. In one word, how would you describe yesterday's performance? What do you want to see from this team next week against Kansas City? Your thoughts on Johnny Manziel's performance? And then, of course, what did you think? Could the environment come through on TV? What did you think of it when watching the game as a Browns fan? 216-578-0850. Again, another just bad performance on the defensive side of the ball. Could not do whatever they want. Couldn't do what they needed to do. Could not get off the field, and it seemed just easy. It was a methodical. That was a very good way to describe it. Just a methodical, we know we're going to win. We know we're going to be able to do what we want to do performance from the Seattle Seahawks. And I felt like if they really wanted to turn the gas on and just go five wide and spread us out, they could have scored 50 if they wanted to.
I agree with that as well.
Which makes me very concerned.
But that goes against everything that Pete Carroll stands for as a coach.
That makes me, well, in the pros perhaps. In college, he had no problem doing that.
Right. It's a different world.
That makes me very concerned for the Steelers, by the way, who turned in an unbelievable performance against the best defense in the NFL. Ben Roethlisberger, Brown, Wheaton, Bryant, disgusting.
D'Angelo,
disgusting. That passing attack is filthy. It's filthy.
Antonio Brown, to me, after watching not all of it, but just watching him win when he needed to win to get Pittsburgh back into that football game, is the best wide receiver in the NFL right now.
I agree with that.
The ball. Hey, I'm going to throw it to Antonio Brown. And this is the route that he's running. And he's going to throw it to Antonio Brown. And it's going to be a reception.
And then as soon as you get all your attention there, I'm going to send Martavis Bryant deep. And we're going to have a 70-yard touchdown. And then once you try to double him over the top and double Antonio Brown, Marcus Wheaton's going to kill you.
Yeah.
And then if you totally sell out for the pass, we're just going to run D'Angelo Williams. Oh, and we'll get Heath Miller for about four or five hitches on third down to get us first downs.
Right.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. They if they wanted to in week 17, they could go for they could if they wanted to try to go for 70 on us, I think it could.
Well, they're in right now.
They could go for 70.
Right?
They got to keep winning though.
They have to keep winning.
They've got to keep winning. And so they will. Kansas City's got to keep winning. All these teams got to keep winning. Kansas City, another big victory there. 216-578-0850. Call us up. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
Final score here from Seattle. The Seahawks win it over the Browns, 30-13.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Another tough Monday for the Dog Pound as the Browns have lost this one. They've now lost eight of their last nine games on the season. It was 30-13 in favor, of course, of the Seattle Seahawks. The Browns now on the season. Their defense has given up 24 or more points in 11 of the last 12 games. Again, 24 or more points in 11 of the last 12 games. And when you're supposed to be a dominant defense, top three in the NFL, as we've heard about this football team, you cannot give up 24 or more points in 11 of 12 games. You can't do that. The Browns have given up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I was wrong. It's now 30 or more in 6 of the last 7. It wasn't just 5 of the last 6. 6 of the last 7 games, they've given up 30 or more points.
And there's no – is there any offensive touchdowns or returns? Or those all fall on the defense?
Well, against the Ravens, there were 2.
That's right. Okay. Gotcha.
That's the only one, though.
Right. That's what I just wanted to point that out. You know,
yeah,
the half Ravens. Empty, half full.
There
perspective.
A little positivity there. Here we go. 216-578-0850. Mark in Myrtle Beach. Welcome to the show.
How you doing, guys?
Good, man. How are you?
Oh, I'm living the dream, man. Living Good. The dream. Hey, I'm sitting here, and after the game yesterday, I had to work, though. I was only able to listen to it. And I came home on the NFL Game Pass and watched the game. And I kept thinking to myself, how do you evaluate Johnny Manziel when you look at what he's throwing to, the group of receivers that he's got Barnage, big play Garrett, and that's about it. You know, I mean, Dwayne Bowe got in a couple passes. How about that?
I loved it.
You know, I did too. I mean, it's like, guy's big. Let's get him in the game. And then you got a defense that's just, it's the secondary just is completely falling apart. Completely. No pass rush, and they could have just done anything. And Johnny's just back there scrambling for his life, throwing to anybody in a Brown uniform. It's, to me, it's awful hard to evaluate him. I thought he did well, but how do you really evaluate this guy?
It's very difficult because it is a results-oriented business. Now, you go back, and the coaches have the opportunity to watch the tape and see what he did. Did he make the right read? Was the football thrown accurately? But sure. The Browns, for example, had 5 drop passes on the day, which, you know, we know is way, way too many. You look at the Seattle Seahawks and their receivers, and on the day, they had 1 dropped pass. 28 targets, 1 drop pass. The Browns, 5 drop passes. So you can't do that. They picked on Tremont Williams, they targeted him 5 times. They completed all 5 for 79 yards and a touchdown. They picked on Charles Gaines. They pretty much did whatever they wanted to do. And I think the other part of it you look at for the Browns, you know, Seattle had 5 missed tackles in the game, which is that's the number
that That's what I was just going to ask you.
5 or fewer. The Browns had 10 missed tackles on the day. 3 by Gipp, 2 by Gaines, 2 by Tremont Williams. When you have 7 missed tackles in your secondary alone, that's a problem. That's a problem for this football team, and it was a problem defensively. They couldn't get off the field, couldn't make plays, and it is interesting. I want to talk about something, Matt, that you brought up to me in the break, which I think is fascinating. And it struck me watching the game, too. When you said it, you put the numbers to what I saw. The Seattle Seahawks play the same defense, and what I mean by that is pretty much the same personnel every single play. The Browns play new personnel every single play. And I think that you've got a scheme that is malfunctioning or is broken, and you've got no continuity of the guys on the field working together, communicating together, and doing the right things. Go ahead and share what you discovered.
Sure. And again, we get stats given out by the National Football League and, you know, through via the Browns, ends up in the dog bowl before we even get into the studio to come do this show. And I look through the stats, I highlight certain things, but I go to play time percentage. And specific to a certain player or something that pops out to me, maybe offensively, but for the most part, I focused on defense. And the one thing that almost in 3D popped off the screen to me was Lane, Sherman, McCray, Wagner, Earl Thomas, and Kendall Wright, right? Guys they've invested money in, significant money into. 6 guys on defense played every single snap on defense for the Seattle Seahawks. The Cleveland Browns had 1. And Carlos Dansby play every single snap. We had Tremont, Gipp, Gaines, and Whitner all 96% or above. But then here's
okay,
where
so
it's
very
here,
similar, 6 and 5.
Similar, 6 and 5. But here's where it's very telling to me. The next player's percentage of snaps drops from 96% to 56%, which is Paul Kruger.
Okay.
With 40 snaps. The next drop from 100% is to only 87%. Which is Michael Bennett, then 84, 78, 69, 64. So 11 players play 64% of the snaps or up to 100% for Seattle.
That's the same 11 guys are playing at a minimum about two-thirds of the snaps.
Correct. And after 5 players who play 96% or more, the next guy plays close to 50% of the defensive snaps, and that's Paul Kruger. And there's Kruger, Dez Bryant, and Robertson at 54, 55, 56. Which is about half of the defensive snaps. So we can talk scheme, and we can talk.
And what does it go after that? Get us, where's the 11th?
The 11th is down to 45%.
So we do not even play the same defensive personnel on half of our snaps.
No. No.
So how can you have, you can't, and the difference with that too is that their 11 is probably like the same grouping. And maybe they change a little bit up front. It seems like their back 7 is pretty much the same every play.
And what it is, it's they love their guys, and their guys are diverse. Where we want to try to put the perfect person in the perfect spot in this call, in this package, to try and win. So we're not only, I mean, and again, props to the Cleveland Browns for getting 11 on the field on defense every time, as much as we cycle bodies in and out. Good for us. So we got a little bit of discipline there because it's difficult to do. And what it real boils down to is the scheme. I've personally questioned the scheme and what we're doing and what guys are doing at times. And I just feel like we're fishing to create a perfect scenario. And you talk to any coach who's coached in the NFL 1 year or 30 years, things never go the way they're supposed to go. And what I think it teaches, it's a lesson that you learn, is somehow, some way, you got to have 11 guys out there that can survive a down. Just get through it. Instead of trying to get the perfect scenario and the perfect guys in the perfect matchup on that one play. Give me 11 guys that want to go stop somebody. Not the perfect 11, aligned perfectly where I think they should be lined up to try to hope to maybe match what they do perfectly to win a down. Go win a down.
That's
what's very clear and apparent in these two play percentage scenarios.
In your opinion, or when you played, did you have that many changes play to play? Or did you guys get because I would imagine, like in anything, it helps to be on the field and get a feel for somebody. The Seahawks after the game said that Johnny played great on that first drive, but we were all out there together able to get a feel for his game.
Yeah.
And get a feel for how
he would
play.
Change was so drastic.
We would never give 11 guys an opportunity to get a feel for a game.
And it goes back to the rotations at running back that we've had for so long. Look what, and I know San Francisco, you can discount them slightly on their talent and so on and so forth, but look what Crow did when given an opportunity to get comfortable and break some tackles.
Sure.
And, you know, an offensive line gets comfortable getting some push.
Right, a running back talks about getting the flow of the game.
Thank you so much.
But I think that at some point trying to find the perfect matchup, because even the players, they were trying to get the perfect matchup. It's not even working. So your perfect matchups are failing. So you might as well just try to get some type of continuity and get guys out there and let them play and let them get a feel for the game and see what they can do.
So and to go back to playing in San Diego, which is, you know, when we were, you know, very good under Wade Phillips, the defense coordinator, who's been on to Dallas, been to Houston, and now in Denver with a top defense in the league. We would carry a base defense, you know, which is a, you know, first and second down. We'd go to a nickel defense, which changes one player. You take out a linebacker, you put in a nickel corner, right? Then we'd have a dime defense, which basically takes out another linebacker and adds another defensive back. And then we'd carry usually one other package. You always carry goal line and short yardage.
Sure.
But that's predominantly, you know, with a little bit more beef up front, but it's base defense with heavier guys in the front four. But then we'd have an outlaw package, which maybe is like five linebackers, two D linemen, two safeties, two corners. And it was just a mix-up package to try to get Sean Merriman, Sean Phillips, you know, and guys running free, confusing, yeah. You know, with that. So I just think we're just trying to do too much. Then we're trying to do too much with a bunch of guys that can't get comfortable. And then because guys get hurt, we've got to go back to the fundamentals.
Got to go back to the fundamentals. And what's interesting is there's another place that is supposedly an incredibly talented defense that is playing this exact same scheme that is struggling, and people are pissed.
Where?
Buffalo.
Yes. High pay defense.
Let me ask you if you've ever heard anything like this. This is a quote today. It never looked to me like we were 100% sure on our assignments or 100% on our technique on defense. That could easily be a quote about the Browns after any game, and we've heard those quotes
in talking to the players personally.
Yeah, that was Rex Ryan talking about his defense in Buffalo, where the players are openly questioning the scheme, openly questioning what's going on. This was a team that led the league in the NFL and led the league in sacks last year that's got 20 on the season. You've got Mario Williams. You've got Marcell Dareus. You've got Kyle Williams. You've got Jerry Hughes. You have talent.
Yes, you do.
But the scheme is not allowing that talent to be effective. You're dropping Mario Williams for God knows what reason. And I think that I don't think that scheme works in the NFL anymore. And people keep talking about all the past success it has. We hear that in press conferences. Well, it's had a lot of success in the past. We know it works. The game has changed. The rules have changed to make it incredibly difficult, I think, to play a lot of press man all over the field and the back end of your defense.
And
people are no longer confused by all those blitz looks.
They're not. And to continue to expound on that point, the league has changed that you can't play man press down in, down out. And if you choose to, you need to have two high-paid corners playing their best 13 out of 16 weeks in a season to be able to survive. And to see what has happened to the Cleveland Browns is you get Tremont Williams, who's a great person, very successful in Green Bay, coming here after his prime. Not saying he's stealing and taking a payday. He's been one of our best players defensively, but he's been targeted. You've been without Joe Hayden, your franchise corner that you paid a significant amount of money to all season. You've got Kaywan Williams, who's a budding nickel in the National Football League, who, you know, will be a great nickel corner for a very long time, can't stay healthy. So you got guys that are paid that made this football team to run down on kickoff and make tackles and to cover punts, covering Doug Baldwin and, you know, being thrown to by Russell Wilson, who's the hottest quarterback in the National Football League right now.
You got your sixth rounder Charles Gaines out there, who it, to my eye, looks like he needs a heck of a lot more seasoning because it's pretty much been every week.
He's very raw.
Very raw. Pierre struggled, and they took Pierre out, but he can't get – I don't know why he can't get back on the field, but he's not getting on the field. It's just been an absolutely ugly, ugly, ugly situation. And I'm telling you, Week 17, if they want to, could get – Week 17 could get absolutely bananas. I mean, similar to what it was in Pittsburgh.
And get your popcorn ready.
Get your popcorn if you like watching high-flying offense. All right, 216-578-0850. We're going to go ahead and get to more phone calls when we come back. Stan, the man, is waiting. We want to hear from you as well. 216-578-0850. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
Is in the backfield with Manziel. The play clock is at 10. They bring Barnage towards the line in motion. Third and goal at the 7. Manziel back to pass, looking left. Now he rolls to the right, looks and fires into the end zone. It's caught! Touchdown! You know who? Barnage!
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Segura and, of course, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Let's go back to the phone line. Stan the man. Stan, how are you?
Hello.
What's up,
hey, Stan?
Stan.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you as well.
You know, your families and friends, and we need peace on earth, you know.
It's yes,
not,
we do.
Not good out there. Anyways, you know, that initial drive that we scored, you know, was mistake-free. It was unbelievable. I thought I was seeing things. But then I came to the reality that Seattle is just too good. I discussed this after the San Francisco game that I was with my oldest son and his bride. And I was discussing after the game with D-Dog, Vince Irwin, and he looked at me because I was happy they won, but he said, Len, this is only San Francisco, remember that. Well, when that happened yesterday, I had to reflect on what he had said. But that five drop passes, I did want to say something about Jimmy. The defense, putrid. What did say something about Jimmy Haslam? I wish he would reach out to you guys, right, and have a news conference that your show would be part of it. He needs to reach out to the fans, okay, because people are thinking about dropping their tickets. So
I feel like you are definitely going to hear from Jimmy Haslam in the near future about the state of this team. I think you should. I think you will. Certainly at the end of the season. Let's go to Paul in Buffalo. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. I heard you talking a little bit. I'm just driving and happened to catch the show, but I heard you talking a little bit about the defense, and obviously Patton's a Ryan disciple.
Yep.
So we see a lot of the same things. We had Patton as our coordinator here. When he was here, our defense was pretty bad against the run, but pretty good
25th.
Against the pass.
Yep.
And overall, it was a pretty decent defense given the talent level we have. But with the changes to the rules, I mean, but the Ryan and Patton defense is predicated on a lot of confusion up front. It looks like seven guys are coming. Only four are, but you don't know which ones, or five or something like that. And I think, like, the league has caught up to that whole thing a little bit. Because
absolutely.
We have plenty of talent in Buffalo on the defensive side. We've had some injuries, but even when we were healthy, we're not getting it done. We got blasted by Kirk Cousins yesterday, man. And so what I think has happened is the changes to the rules, it's based on a lot of press man on the outside. You need physical corners, and if they can't jam and hang on like they used to be able to, it's not going to work, and the pass rush isn't getting home, and all of a sudden the ball's out in 2 seconds, and these guys can, you know, take a slant 60 yards to the house or beat you down the field or whatever.
Yep.
And unfortunately, I see a lot of the same things from what little Browns I've watched, but a lot of the same things. And you guys have a decent talent base on defense. You should be getting
it
done.
Yeah, it's the most expensive.
The scheme's not working for you guys, and it's not working for us either right now.
And it didn't work for Rob Ryan, who's already been fired in New Orleans. I just think that scheme is having a very difficult time adapting to the modern National Football
League. Right, but look. Todd Bowles takes over a New York Jets team full of great players with his system as the now new head coach, and they're, you know, in the playoff hunt.
They're thriving. They certainly are. They won a game in which the offense didn't do a great job against the Dallas Cowboys, but that defense came up with four interceptions in a big way. Let's go to Lewis in Shaker Heights now. Lewis, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? I mean, it's fine to blame the scheme, but if you're poor at the basics, blocking and tackling, I mean, you can blame scheme all you want. I don't know how many counted missed tackles I counted in the game.
Ten.
And they're just not breaking down, wrapping, and putting the person on the ground. Let me give you an example. I was watching the Carolina game maybe 3 or 4 weeks back, and I forgot who they were playing, but this one guy had a huge hole. I'm like, oh, he's going to get 4 or 5 yards off of that. They linebacker met him at the line of scrimmage and put him down at the line of scrimmage. And blocking, if I was in strength and condition, they should fire him. Because I think I can bench press more than Cam Irving. I mean, Cam, oh my God. I mean, that first drive, Cam Irving was not in there. And then it seems like when he got in there, everything just went south.
He had a rough opening. He ended up actually playing fairly well against Michael Bennett.
He gave up
as
the first
the game
sack.
Went on. He gave up, like, he got thrown around like 3 times in a row. But then he kind of found his footing and did a little bit better. And as soon as I made mention of that on my sideline report, like, because I was watching him, and he was actually handling Michael Bennett. And as soon as I made mention of that on my sideline report, the next play was his hold, which was a horrible, horrible hold. And I'm like, oh, God, holding. But the Browns, at the end of the day, you know, you've got fundamental issues. Certainly, the fundamentals have eluded this team all year. You've got scheme issues, and you've got performance issues.
You do. And
there's no little blue pill you can take to cure those.
No, there's not. Blue or red, which one?
Whatever.
To the caller's point about, you know, in us referencing scheme when it boils down to the players missing tackles, within a scheme, and what I see from this scheme is there's a trickle-down effect. When a D lineman gets hooked or takes the easy route and doesn't cross face on a certain blocker or is not physical at the point of attack, it makes it very difficult on the linebackers to be decisive and fit off of those defensive linemen. Okay? That's A and B. Okay? So A messes up, B's got to make them right, and B sometimes gets caught between a rock and a hard place. Now, this is, and as the Seattle Seahawks, you know, eluded some tackles, and we missed some tackles. Then you get Gip and Whitner as the level C. So A messes up, takes the easy route. B's in a rock and a hard place. What do you expect C to do, right? When Whit or Gip are expected to fit in a certain area, because I don't believe that there are gaps. We're two-gapping a lot. It's a lot of reading on the run, and I don't think we can read that well. A little illiterate. But you're expecting Witt and Gip to fit in an area, and when a player comes running scot-free through an area where they should fit, not in that area, they're forced to become football players and make those arm tackles with a player running away from them with a full head of scheme when on paper, in practice, it looked and fit so differently. Because what it boils down to, football is a game of angles. It's a game of angles, especially defensively. You take the right angle, You're gonna be in a place to make a play.
Yep.
And I think that's the trickle-down effect of this defense and the guessing that happens to me and my perception that happens from a linebacker and secondary standpoint when it comes to fitting the run or making a play is something like I've never seen before.
And to be honest, the effort on some of the tackles, certainly the Charles Gaines one where it looked like he thought he was playing two-hand touch, which led to the sideline disagreement. Now, I was able to see that from the sideline, but on TV, it sounds like they captured that better. What did you make of the Charles Gaines-Dante Whitner disagreement?
I have no idea what happened. I have life going on when a Browns game is on, you know, with kids and other things going on. So I'm watching the football game, but it was enough to make me turn my head to see it. I rewound it and tried to see it again to show the other individuals at my house, like, whoa, look what's going on. So I have no idea what happened.
Sounded like Whitner was upset with the tackling or what Gaines was doing. Apparently he'd been out of position before, let him know about it, and Gaines took exception and pushed him back, and Whitner had to be held back.
And I'm not being critical, and I'm not trying to pour on, but I wouldn't imagine that a rookie would push Richard Sherman, you know, in any way after hearing his words or barbs about the lack of his effort or the lack of his technique or an ME that he might have had on a play prior.
Yeah, so.
Because I think Richard Sherman might swing on a rookie.
So do you think, like, when it comes down to this with tackling, do you put that on the play, tackling technique, not assignments, blowing assignments? Is that all on the players? Is that on the coaches and the players? Who's responsible for that?
At this point, everybody's responsible.
Why has it not been cleaned up?
That's the big, at this point, everybody's responsible because I think everyone just throws their hands up in the air like, I don't know. I don't even know how to fix this. And that's why, now I'm not calling for anybody's heads. That's why you have to, as the decision maker here for the Cleveland Browns, you have to be so passionate and enamored about finding the right people to come put on that uniform and to guide these young men to go out there and be presentable 16 weeks in a season.
Yeah, and that certainly has been the challenge for the Cleveland Browns this year. Let's get Terry in Cleveland in here before we take a break and we hear from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine. Terry.
Yeah, thanks. Your favorite caller. I just wanted to run a few things
by
you.
I do like you, Terry.
I'm going to go back to the Pittsburgh game. You know why he looked successful, Manziel? I'll tell you. He threw 17 bubble screens, which are nothing but long handoffs. That's unheard of at any level of football. He had a lot of yardage in garbage time, okay, when the game was over. I don't understand it. He's not a difference maker. A lot of his passes, if you watch the games, you're right on the sidelines, okay, really close up. If you watch his watch, a lot of them are 5 to 8 yard routes. You know what it reminds me of? The old Brady Quinn and Colt McCoy dink and dunk offense. He's an average football player. He's not a difference maker. Okay, he's not going to change anything. Okay, he's one of the most overrated players in a long, long time. Okay, against true competition, he gets embarrassed. Scrub teams, he can hang and maybe win a football game. As soon as the competition level comes up to where you really need to be a pro's pro, it's not there.
Dino, keep Terry on hold. Terry, I want to ask you one question. When you watch, and you sound, you know, you're angry about Manziel, or you obviously don't like Manziel, and that's fine. After yesterday's game, though,
it's not that I like him. He's just not any good, like people think, like you.
I have no. I will say what I've said before. I have no idea.
He's 27 as a starter.
Right now,
we want to judge every quarterback by wins and losses except him. He's 2-7 as a starting quarterback.
He hasn't even started 9 games, so that's impossible.
Yes, he started. He started 7 and won 2. He's 2-7.
It's 2-5.
Look it up. No, he isn't.
How could you be 2-7 if you've only started seven games?
He is 2-7. Okay, I believe I could be wrong about that in his NFL career. Excuse me, I could be wrong about
that. He's 2-5.
2-5. Okay, 2-5 then. Recheck that, though.
Well, if you've only started 7 games, the numbers have to add up to 7. That's all.
Well, okay.
He's 2-5.
Okay. No,
it doesn't
problem.
Matter. I get that. My question – hold on. Just answer this question for me. Because you are obviously – you're focused on Johnny. When you watched that game yesterday, where in the list of the Browns' problems, when do you get to Johnny?
His numbers are high schoolish. He's not a difference maker. He's not going to bring anything else to the table.
What do you think about the Browns' defense?
Well, now that's all we're talking about. Since Johnny can't produce points, now it's everybody else. And there's other quarterbacks who are throwing to mediocre receivers.
Okay, just so you know, the Browns' defense set a record that has never – something never happened before in the NFL – 10 straight games, they allowed 24 more points. That's never happened. It's now 11 of 12. They've allowed 30 or more in 6 of the last 7 games. So I understand that you may not think Manziel's good, and that's fine. You're totally entitled to that opinion. And he may not be good. I don't know. I've seen progress from him, so I enjoy that. But at the same time, right now, when you look at the list of problems for the Cleveland Browns, because you talk about wins and losses, Josh McCown's one-loss record here was not good. But I don't think Josh McCown was solely responsible for those losses. I think what's happening on the most expensive defense in the NFL has been terrible.
Quarterbacks in the NFL are judged on wins and losses.
But
we hear that every week.
That doesn't make it right.
That is not progress. You think progress is being able to call a play from the huddle. That's like some big deal. It isn't. Okay? It's not progress that you're seeing. This is mediocrity. It's not some big step forward. He's doing common things. Okay? It was so bad that even a common little thing that he does is like, oh, he's really making strides. No, he isn't. He's doing normal things. That's not progress. Progress is doing good things, better things, and things that you will actually win football games, not stuff that a high school quarterback can do.
All
100
right.
and something yards throwing is not progress. 50% completion, it's not a big deal.
They drop five passes. If they catch those five passes, he completes 75% of his passes against Seattle.
Terry's done.
But, I mean, it's to me, you're focused – listen, again, I don't know if Johnny's going to be good, but I do believe Johnny Manziel is making marked improvement, and I feel very comfortable in saying that. I think that he is making improvement. I think when you look at the ills and the issues of this football team, Johnny Manziel is way, way down the list.
Yes.
Way down the list, okay? And that, to me, is not indicative of that he's the answer, but I think he's shown you enough, or he's starting to show, that you feel like maybe you could go into a season and see if you can win with him. Until this defense gets fixed, you're not going to be beating anybody in the National Football League, okay? Let me just say that. You are not going to be beating anybody in the National Football League. So that's the bottom line. That's the biggest problem for me. Josh McCown, he wants to talk about wins and losses. I know he thinks Josh McCown's better than Johnny. Josh McCown's one-loss record worse than Johnny's this year.
Correct.
It is what it is. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Penn, will have his remarks about this game when we return.